Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Maps Hysteria, a podcast all about Married at First Sight. Today, Omar and I are really excited because we're joined by sex and intimacy coach from the series, Charlene Douglas.
Hey! Hey guys, how are you guys doing?
We are very excited to have you. How are you?
I am very well. I have spoken about maths probably like every single day, and this day is no different. And I love it. I have to say, I love talking about Married at First Sight. So.
It must be such an intense experience. Because when do you finish filming it? In the spring,
July, August time. So it sort of wraps up then during the summer. So we filmed for quite a few months. We're probably about 4 or 5 months all in total. So it's in our world. I feel like it's in our world for a whole year, like in terms of filming. And then obviously when it comes out, it's like topical conversation. So it's literally like all year round, pretty much.
Yeah, I imagine it's a lot because, like you say, even when you've finished filming, then it gets shown on TV and then you've got the huge fallout from that. Because one thing I wanted to ask you about was I've talked on the podcast about potential unconscious bias against some of the women in the programme. For example, we had Jonathan make a couple of size comments. Do you think we've seen sort of misogyny at play, or have I gone a bit too dark with my thoughts there?
No, I think that, you know, I think there are, of course, different labels that people are attaching to certain behaviours. I probably wouldn't go down the route of labelling anything, you know, in terms of what I'm going to say next. But I think that Jonathan has recognised like some of his wrongdoings. I think in that moment, I think, you know, when you make a comment and everyone's saying that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, you can respond in two ways. You can be super humble and be like, you know what, I'm really sorry. Like, I didn't realise, and, you know, I'm going to learn from that. But oftentimes when we feel like we're sort of backed into a corner, we want to sort of fight back, and we'll sort of sometimes say things that may make the situation worse. And I think Jonathan did that. You know, the expert said that on the show, the other cast members were saying that to him. So I'm hopeful that he's learned from that, but I don't know.
I mean, yeah, last night we saw the dinner party, the latest dinner party, didn't we?
Yeah.
And did seem to be taking it on the chin a bit, that he couldn't make those comments and that he should be more aware of people's feelings, I thought.
I felt really sorry for him last night, especially Thomas, who, you know, he does go to 10 quite quickly.
Really?
I thought Jonathan was trying to show some contrition, and Thomas had already decided that he was going to have a go at him. He'd already put it all in the letter. So it was...
Yeah, I think the thing is for Jonathan, like, what do you do if you genuinely believe that it's okay to say that I don't like women that look a particular way? Like, you know, he just felt like that's okay to say, and it didn't matter what the feedback was for him. He just wasn't seeing it a different way. That's hard because he's a nice guy. Yeah. And so I suppose he doesn't want to be seen as a horrible person, but he was trying to be honest as well. But it just didn't go down too well.
Yeah, we've had the discussion quite a few times about having a type. And I think it's totally, totally fine. I do a bit in my stand-up set about it. Because I just think everyone, you insist that you don't have a type, Kelly. But...
No, I don't have a physical type. I don't judge... I do judge people for having a very strict physical type, actually, just because it doesn't make sense to me, because I go more off a feeling or a chemistry I have with somebody, or I can appreciate when somebody's sort of conventionally good looking, but I often change my mind about that once I start talking to them.
Yeah.
And vice versa. Somebody might walk into a room and I might just think, oh, he's average looking. And then I'll talk to him and he's really funny or he's really kind or clever. And I'm like, oops, hang on, I think I like this one. So I don't have as much of a type. So we do argue about that a lot, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
I suppose it's hard though, but what do you then do if you're not particularly attracted to a type? I suppose you don't say it on national television. Probably that's the first thing that's the first bit of advice. But I think, you know, it addressed some very serious and very interesting conversations, as has lots of situations that have happened on Married at First Sight, that it gets people talking about right and wrong. And I think for Jonathan, he believes that it's okay to say things like that. And as I said, I'd like to think that he's changed his mind now on that, but I'm not too sure.
Well, I think my criticism of him wasn't really about having a type. It was more the idea of, I have a type and I don't care if you're offended by the way I deliver that information. That was the problem.
Yeah. But I think he does care, though. I just think that, you know, because he's been backed into a corner with everyone saying, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. It's like, you know, when you're a child and everyone's like, you're wrong, you're wrong. You're like, I don't care. You're wrong. So what? You know, it's just like, you're just saying anything just to get back. When he calms down and maybe it's just him and Sophie, maybe it's in that space that you can say, you know what, upon reflection, maybe I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. I think he did apologise to her. I think he did.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we caught that. Yeah, it must be difficult when you're really under fire from people like Thomas and Jenna wasn't holding back either with him. So I did feel sorry for him last night. It was a dramatic dinner party.
he ruffled feathers, and you know, I would say that if I was at that dinner party, therapist or no therapist, I probably would have responded quite similarly to some of the other people, because I think it does hit a nerve, particularly for women. It does hit a nerve if you make comments about a woman's body and, you know, if you get bigger, then I won't find you attractive. And it's like a lot of women that then go on to have children, naturally their bodies will, you know, become bigger, you know, or, you know, as we know that, you know, you can eat a chocolate bar in your 20s and your 40s, it, you know, it sits differently on your body. So yeah, it does hit a nerve, I think, for a lot of people, particularly women. But I don't believe that Jonathan meant it to be offensive to women.
Yeah, he was just sort of trying to defend himself, really, wasn't
he? Yeah, I think so.
Talking about hitting a nerve.
Oh, no.
Whitney. So initially, I sort of stuck my neck on the line and was defending her constantly on the podcast, saying, to me, she just seems like a little girl that's grieving the loss of her mammy. And she's got this wall up because she's trying to protect herself. And now I just look like a bit of an idiot because she's dropped her walls for Matt. And do you think maybe it was just that she didn't fancy Duca? He wasn't her type?
Well, I think both things can exist in the same space. So I do believe that Whitney is a young girl who is grieving her mum. You know, I think as I've said in the press before, you know, what she has been through, I mean, just brings tears to my eyes, just the thought of it, you know, let alone the fact that she has lived that and she's still living that. So how she even, you know, moves one step forward and lives life, I don't know. So I genuinely have a lot of love for Whitney. Some of her behaviours and some of her actions I don't agree with. I do feel like for her, there wasn't the spark for her with Duca. So I don't feel like she gave it a chance. So a classic example would be when I did the intimacy exercises with them. Of course, you know, we've not seen, you guys just saw the edited version, like the awkward, me standing there awkwardly when Keisha and Kwame were about to, I don't know, get it on or whatever was happening there. But with Whitney and Duca, as soon as I went into the room, they were very welcoming. We had a good old laugh. But Whitney was quite adamant that she wasn't going to do any of the tasks. Now, again, it was edited. And, you know, I don't want to sort of come across as, you know, I'm not going to say anything negative about production. It's not an easy job to edit. I wouldn't want to do it. There's a lot of footage. But I think what you didn't see was that it wasn't me sort of saying to Whitney and Duca, there you go and kiss. I just wanted to add that because I think that's really important, particularly as the intimacy coach. That's definitely not something that I would do. It's me saying that these are a range of intimacy tasks. Choose which ones work for you. And if you can build it up from kind of doing a talking exercise to a bit of a touch exercise, and if you want to do the kiss exercise, you know, have some fun with it and go with it. Whitney was adamant that she wasn't going to do any of it. And it didn't matter how I presented it, you know, how animated I was. You know, she had a laugh with it, but she wasn't going to do it. I think she finally did one of the tasks and it was kind of a bit half-heartedly. So I think that she just didn't fancy Duca and she wasn't willing to try much more until Matt came along and then we saw a different side of Whitney.
Yeah, we certainly did. In terms of the matching process then, because to me, that first episode, when we're hearing the description of the type of person that Whitney's into, Duca ticks all those boxes.
100%.
How is he different from Matt, really? He's got no tattoos on his face, but otherwise he's a big bloke. He's got, you know, he's got a big beard, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't see what the issue was. Was there a concern in your matching, or were you like pretty confident with that one?
I think there was a level of confidence that would be a really good match. Like Duca is a good looking guy. He has the beard. He's very kind as well, very loyal. Yes, you know, in a group of people, he is, I want to use the word loud, I don't know. I don't want to use the word showman either, because I think that was Whitney's words. But I think, you know, he's a sociable person. And, you know, I think that's a really lovely quality to have. But equally, you know, when you speak to Duca on a one-to-one, he's kind, he's loyal. When you listen to how he speaks about people, about women, he's the nicest guy. So I was a bit taken aback that Whitney didn't give him a chance, but I feel like she didn't give him a chance from the wedding. So it wasn't like, you know, even before he opened his mouth, she was like, what am I doing? So I genuinely don't feel like she gave him a chance at the beginning. I think towards the end she tried, but then, you know, obviously Matt then came along and I think her focus was then on him.
How do you feel about the introduction of new couples kind of halfway through the process, because obviously that didn't happen last year? So you a fan of that addition?
Yeah, absolutely. You see, I think the thing is Married at First Sight, like, we want it to replicate real life. Now, you know, you will be with a partner in real life, you will completely be into them, everything's going really well, and you go to a dinner party and there are new couples there and you're kind of navigating those new couples and looking at kind of what it brings in your own relationship. You know, are you looking at how close they are? Are you comparing it to your own relationship? How do you manage and navigate that? So these are real life situations that occur in relationships. Of course, in terms of from a TV point of view, it's like, it's fascinating to watch the dynamics as well. Like, of course, right? It, like, as much as we're trying to replicate real life, it is a TV show as well, right? So there's an element of entertainment there. I think that's clear to see. However, there are some serious topics that come up as a result of the intruder couple coming in. And I think that's quite powerful.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword for me, the new couples coming in, because I like the drama that it brings. But also, I find that I've become so emotionally invested in the couples that we've seen since the beginning that it takes me a while to care as much about the new couples.
Are you saying you don't care about the other couple?
I do. It just makes you realise how emotionally invested you are in the ones that have been there since the beginning. Because you sort of forget, oh, hang on, they were new just 3 weeks ago. I feel like I know them like my own now. It's just a very powerful TV program, isn't it?
I could forget that. I think though with the intruder couples, because they have such, their stories are so powerful, like they quickly become part of the whole story when we're at first sight. So at first you see sort of Sophie and Jonathan walking in really innocently, hi everyone, and you know you get Gemma and Matt, and they're, you know, the couple with all the tattoos, and you know you see their personalities. It's like, hi everyone, hi, and it all feels like Mary Poppins and like roses and petals and cream and la di la. And then, you know, things start to happen. You know, you get the Matt and Gemma story, you get the Sophie and Jonathan story kicking off, and you start to get involved with another set of couples with another set of stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially this year, I suppose it was basically two in, two out that week, because BJ and Jess went.
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, God, we have to talk to you about Lara and Richie. That was... Okay. What was your level of... When we spoke to Paul, he said that he's always trying to find the balance between what is going to be entertaining. He said he's come to the realisation that a lot of people watch this not to celebrate love, but to enjoy the drama. So there's a certain amount of matching where... Some you'll be very confident about and some you'll feel a bit more lukewarm about. How do you navigate that? Are there disagreements between the three of you about what might be a successful?
No, Paul, Mel and I never disagree. I mean, you know, we're always on the same page. No, I mean, I say that in jest, but most of the time we do agree with the matching process and with what's going on within the relationships of the couples. But I think there are definitely times where we're like, not sure about this, and we're all quite convincing, so I suppose we'll get to a point where we'll sort of talk our points so much that we'll get to a stage where the other person's like, okay, all right, yeah, cool, okay, that makes sense. You know, I mean, no one's going to go ahead with something if we don't agree with it. That, I mean, that goes without saying. But overall, we see things, you know, in the same way. You know, got married, had lots of fun together, were fully in love, and then went off into the sunset. All the couples, like, I don't know if you guys would watch it, like, to be honest. I don't know if I would. I think it would be like, oh, this is really nice. But then it'd probably get a bit boring.
Yeah, definitely. You want the love stories, but yeah, you won't watch it without the drama.
Yeah. And you want real life to be reflected as well. Like, real life isn't usually the Adam and Taya story necessarily. Like, I mean, you know, it usually doesn't go like that. Usually it is the Jenna and the Zoes, the Keisha and the Kwanis, where people, you know, they stay together and people are like, how are you guys together? Because there's maybe conflicts and things that they've got to work through. Like, that's like a real relationship, isn't it?
You mentioned Keisha and Kwame there, right? And I was planning to ask you, because you're a sex therapist, you're an intelligent woman.
Yeah.
Can you please unpack Kwame's vocabulary for me? Because I don't know what the man is talking about ever. Like, what was free money about?
Yeah. So I think the thing is with Kwame is that he is really trying to be respectful to the process and respectful to Keisha. But sometimes it doesn't quite happen the way that he would like it to. So he, I think, sometimes feels like if he uses lots of words, then, you know, he will get closer and closer to the point that he's trying to make. But bless him, I think sometimes what can happen is that the more words he uses, the more he loses people. So there are lots of times during a commitment ceremony where, I mean, I'm always very expressive. So if you ever want to know what I'm really thinking, just look at my face. Like, it's classic from the frowns. I mean, it's so funny, like the different shots that they've captured of my face expressions, frowning and shaking my head and all sorts of stuff. And I'm like, geez, I didn't realise that I was so expressive. But I think for Kwame, like for me, with all the words, I'm like, but what's the point? Like, tell me what the point is. Tell me, do you like Keisha or not? Tell me, even if you say to me, I don't really like her 100% right now in that way, but, you know, can you help us so that we can get to that stage? Then I can work with that. But I was struggling a little bit because I couldn't work out like what the story was. Do you like her? Do you not? You took her to the park bench, you know, and is it Leighton or Leightonstone? Like, gorgeous area, but, you know, it didn't take her to your house. We didn't see your family with her. Like, I don't get it.
Well, that's what's so confusing, especially that moment, because literally the commitment ceremony before that, he said, we're all right now, we can leave.
I know.
But he doesn't want her to come to his house. So
it's so surprising, actually. I tell you, that scene was so memorable for me, because never have I been in front of a couple that have said, no, we're good. We don't need you anymore. Like, I couldn't actually believe that was what he was saying. And I kept looking at Keisha and I was thinking, are you in agreement with this too? Like, I couldn't work out from her face expression whether she was or not. So I kept looking at her thinking, are you both really coming to the commitment ceremony in front of three experts with all the other couples watching you and saying, no, we're good? I still don't get it.
Yeah, they're very confusing. And I'm a bit confused by Keisha as well, because she seems very strong and independent. I can't believe she hasn't written leave once yet. Like, surely she's clocked it now that he's just babbling. Like, surely she should leave.
I think the thing is for Keisha, I think she wants to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think that, you know, the scenes that we're seeing, obviously, you know, it feels and it looks quite clear that, you know, he's not really into her. But, you know, they have private conversations behind closed doors. And I suspect that there are things that he had been saying to her that kind of maybe gave her some hope, you know, or maybe made her feel like, okay, maybe this is going somewhere. Because one thing that he kept saying was that he's quite a private person and he has children outside of the experiment. So it's important for him to not jump into something. And I get that, and to represent himself well. And also he's from the Ghanaian culture as well. And so that's important from a cultural point of view, that, you know, you represent yourself in a particular way, you know, and in a respectful way. So that, I think, was always there for Kwame. But I think the problem is quite confusing, I think, for Keisha, in terms of like, where do we stand? So let's look at that intimacy exercise that I gave them. I mean, you know, they were... Look, I knew when it was time to go, let's just say that. I knew when it was time to go. Yeah.
My job here is done.
Done. It's the Nanny McPhee type thing, isn't it? Like, you know, you don't need me right now. I'm gone. I'm out of here. So, yeah. So there was chemistry. There was definitely chemistry between the two of them.
That's interesting, because that's the bit that I keep not seeing. I put it on Twitter that they seem to be going along nicely, and I have thought Kwame is trying to be respectful of Keisha and going about it in, you know, excessively wordy way. I put a tweet on saying I just don't see any romantic chemistry, and that all the comments were just, no, don't see it, don't see it, don't see it. So, yeah, there must be things going on that we're not seeing,
yeah.
I think.
Well, there were pockets of situations that we saw where it felt like, okay, there's a little bit of a connection there. So there was a time where Keisha put her arm around Kwame. You know, there was some eye contact that we saw most definitely when I did that intimacy task with them. I mean, look, let me tell you about this intimacy task. So the plan was that Keisha was going to come in my mind, right? That Keisha was going to come in like maybe like a little vest top, just a little bit of pair of shorts, just so that there's enough body showing that, you know, that maybe Kwame can do a bit of a massage on her. Wasn't expecting Keisha to come out in that gorgeous, sexy, oh my gosh, outfit. Literally, I was speechless. And I remember her saying, do you think this is too much? And I was speechless. I was like, babe, like, wow. All that gorgeous body. The outfit was amazing. And I just thought, you know what? This is a girl that is given her heart and is willing to be vulnerable and to give it a go. And I genuinely respected her for that. And then when Kwame came in, he had his shirt off and I think he had little shorts on. I was like, okay, Kwame's really ready for this too. So, and then I said to Kwame, it's up to you whether you have a blindfold on or not. He's like, no, give me the blindfold. I'll wear the blindfold. Yeah, I'll wear the blindfold. So they were so up for that activity. And then, like I said, the time came where I knew, you know, when you just feel the sexual energy rise, you just feel it in the space. That was my time to go. And I went out there and I took my suitcase and I left.
Shot of you running down the corridor.
yeah. Taxi. Yeah.
Another big Kwame moment, which we have to talk about, is the when he dropped the bomb about Matt and Whitney at that retreat. That's another thing, actually, the change in the format. Are you a fan of the retreat? Because that just seems like a recipe for carnage.
Well, I mean, retreats are supposed to be that, right? That you retreat and enjoy and you relax and, you know, it's a nice, peaceful environment. But of course, you know, we've got lots of personalities where, you know, people are quite opinionated and people are frustrated and angry and hurt. But, you know, there's lots of laughter, you know, so, you know, there were times where they were all sort of playing music together and having a good old laugh. I mean, before the storm kicked in, of course. Kwame delivering that message the way that he did, I mean, TV gold, to be honest, yeah. In terms of, like, did he just say that?
It was a strange affair, the whole retreat. Like the questions that people were asked, you know, which other groom would you be with? Which other bride would you be with? What is the purpose of those questions?
So, okay, let's take it back to the real world. You know, I have like a little plug here, like sex quiz cards. And, you know, my sex quiz cards, there's lots of questions on there that couples will ask each other. And I suppose it's to kind of get people talking and thinking and exploring and working through difficult feelings, insecurities, or whatever it may be. I think it really tests the quality and the strength of your answer a question. Actually, I really respect, you know, this person, this other person. And if I wasn't married to this person, this would be someone that would be my type. Now, I suppose from a relationship point of view, it's like, you know, can that relationship stand the test of time? Like, can that relationship survive such information and how do they work through it? And look, of course, I know it to some extent it's entertaining to watch, but for us, it's also about, I suppose, teaching the world how to navigate these types of situations and conversations and insecurities and jealousies, etc. And if they really struggle to do it, then they come to the commitment ceremony and we work on it with them.
Mm-hmm. We actually discussed that on the podcast because I said, I think it's really healthy in a marriage to be able to say, oh, he's fit, she's good looking, and just discuss it together because it shows that, you know, you're always going to come back to each other. But you weren't so sure, were you?
I think it's dangerous.
Dangerous ground, dangerous territory.
Why do you think it's dangerous?
I just think you're asking for trouble. I mean, I do understand rationally what you're saying, that, yeah, of course, it's you're giving yourself an obstacle that you can then overcome and thereby strengthening your relationship, assuming it is strong enough to overcome that obstacle. But I just think, I know me and my wife are going along all right. I don't know, why am I making my life harder?
No, you are right. But the thing is, if we don't talk about some of these things, it doesn't mean that they're not there. And what then happens is it just then rears its ugly head at a time when you least expect it. And it's like, oh my gosh, what do I do with this information? So, for example, if, let's say your wife, I'm not sure she's listening to this, but let's say your wife believes that your type is a particular type of woman, it would be good if she could address that with you and you could speak about it. And then you both feel really clear about the situation where you can say, no, you know what, you are the type of woman that I want to be with, for example. Mm-hmm. If she doesn't speak to you about it, and then you both go out to a nice club, and then she sees you sort of talking to another woman very innocently, and then really reacts, you'll wonder, where's this come from? Like, I don't understand, like, what? So what we're trying to do is say, look, let's address some of the kind of the elephant in the rooms. Like, you know, of course there are lots of good looking people on Married at First Sight. Mm-hmm. Are there any couples, are there any individuals that you think, I wouldn't mind, you know, maybe being in a relationship with someone like that? And let's talk about it. Let's bring it out in the open and let's see if your relationship can withstand that.
So there you go. You can have that chat with Claire later.
There you go.
Yeah, that'll be good. She's not, I'm not in her good books at the moment anyway, Charlie.
Oh, no. You said that she's not feeling too well. So maybe like this is an opportunity to really get in there and show her how nurturing you are and how much she means to you.
Yeah, but then I have to do stuff and I don't. No, I will. I'll look after her. I'll do my best. I went out drinking on the weekend. I didn't come back for a day. So.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
But you apologised and you spoke to her about, you know, next time you won't do it like that, and you know.
Yeah. I took the swearing for, you know, a good 20, 30 minutes. Like, yeah, I deserve this.
Oh, you deserve it. PCB actually put a poll up about that behaviour the other day.
Oh really?
And he said it was more than a red card, it was like instant dismissal territory.
Oh,
because it was huge disrespect.
I don't think, right?
Do you see it as disrespect, Omar? I feel like the conversation now gone on to your relationship with me.
Do I say it's disrespect? I think, disrespect might be a bit strong. It's a bit rude. We didn't necessarily have plans on the Sunday, but I did leave on Saturday tea time saying, oh, I'll probably be back by 9 or 10. I'm not really up for it. And then came back at about 5 o'clock on the Sunday.
Wow. Were you in touch with her? Did you sort of check in with her? And
I'd sent a message on the Saturday night saying that I was staying at my mate's, which she could sort of anticipate that might happen. And then my phone died on the Sunday, so I got one of my mates to message her.
Okay.
So there was some contact, but, you know, it's... It wasn't great behaviour.
Okay. I think she deserves some flowers.
I also think you need to pay Charlene for this session.
Yeah.
Free session.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Actually, just while we're talking about the work you do, Charlene, because I've been fangirling all over you, and you've got a really exciting workshop on the 19th of November, haven't you, called... Bringing Sexy Back, which teaches women how to orgasm. Now, I have a bit in my stand-up all about how we need all of the conditions to be right. We need the stars to align. We're so different to men in that way. But the minute I read about this workshop, Charlene, and I know I'm wrong, I know it won't be like this, my head went straight to this image of a lot of women with handheld mirrors getting acquainted with their tuppences for the first time. But I know it's not like that. So what can women expect from that?
No, as you said, I just had that image of, women in the mirrors. No, it's not that at all. It really is just a safe space to listen to and learn about the facts around orgasms, to include the different types of orgasms that you can have, because, you know, we've been taught that there's just one orgasm and it's kind of like the When Harry Met Sally kind of type orgasm, you know, that over the top, orgasm. And so this is a workshop where we're teaching people what an orgasm is, you know, can everyone have it, you know, the different types of orgasms. And of course, you know, all those topics that, you know, people want to know about, but are kind of afraid to ask, you know, around oral sex, around squirting, like, can everyone do it? What is it? Where does it come from? You know, all those kind of questions that people sometimes just don't know, and there's nowhere to really go to get those answers. So yes, that's a workshop basically where we're going to talk about sex, and it's just for ladies.
Oh my god, that sounds amazing. Is it going to be online or is it just in person?
So it's just in person. I think a lot of people sort of ask, can I do it online, and not quite sure if I want to do that just yet, just because I like last year when we did Bring Sex Back, it was so amazing to just have all these women in one place. Like, they all came in really shy, you know, kind of like, oh my gosh, what's Charlene going to talk about, sort of thing, you know, bowing their head, and they sat down, and some people came by themselves, so they didn't know each other, and then they left like Beyonce or Rihanna, like kind of clicking their fingers and walking out, and you know, they left so confident, and there were lots of like emails like, you know, I had sex for the first time with my husband last night, or like, you know, we had a good conversation about sex, all that you said, Charlie, and then we started to have sex. I'm like, I'm helping the world to have sex.
Yeah, that is brilliant. Get it on a t-shirt.
Do you know, I think I might just do that.
just to bring that back to Married at First Sight then, actually, is that,
yeah,
how does it go the first few weeks? Because I sort of imagine that's the difficulty is breaking down, especially for men, like the discomfort about talking openly about sex in front of a room full of, you know, at the beginning, sort of strangers and camera crews and everything like that. Is that very difficult?
I mean, look, you know, the couples have a choice as to whether they share what's been happening in the bedroom or not. You know, I, as much as people might think I'm really interested in what people, like the details of what people do in their bedroom, I'm not. But what is really important is intimacy in a relationship, particularly physical intimacy, for most couples, not for everyone. And so it is a question that I ask. And I think if you come onto the show and you know that there's a sex therapist, you obviously have to expect that the question is going to be asked, like, you know, what's happening? And look, there were couples that are willing to say, look, we're doing it and we're enjoying it, you know. And I think Jenna and Zoe had said that. I think Jordan and Shanita had said that, and they were having a good old giggle. I mean, you know, as I've said before, you know, I know when someone's had sex anyway, so I can see the energy, the way they look at each other. I can see the body language, you know. And it's that when you've seen someone naked, when they're fully clothed, you kind of, your body language is kind of, I don't know, like a tune, it's like a line, you know, because you've seen each other in the most vulnerable position. So Jenna and Zoe, Jordan and Shanita, I kind of knew it before they told me. But there were other couples that were quite private, and, you know, and that's their prerogative, and I completely respect that. I think Keisha and Kwame being one of them.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this idea that if you hold off on sex for too long, you can end up in the friend zone. But I don't know. To me, I understand holding off on sex as a power move. I understand it as a way to protect yourself or as a moral thing. But in this experiment, you've married somebody, you're interested in them, say, in this scenario. Why are they not? Why would somebody not in that situation?
Well, I mean, some people just not ready, you know. You didn't see this on the show, but I spoke to one of the couples about, like, some people like associate themselves more with being what they call demisexual. So, you know, where an emotional connection needs to, like a real deep emotional connection needs to be there before that sexual attraction comes. And, you know, there are a lot of people where, and actually I suppose it depends on the couple as well, because there are some people that you meet where there's an instant like sexual spark where, you know, and I always say with the ladies, you know, you try to kind of like hold out and then you end up like having sex in the first night or something. You're like, oh gosh, I was trying to hold out for date number two or three, because the sexual spark is so strong that you just like, you just want to go for it. But then there are some times, and it could be, you know, in line with past relationships where things haven't gone quite right for you and you want to protect yourself, where you just say, look, you know, I'm going to give it a bit more time to see like where this relationship goes, and then a sexual connection, the sexual intercourse will take place. So people just have to do what works for them.
Well, I was going to ask, one of the couples we've not spoken about yet is Thomas and Adrian.
Yeah.
Because I can see that they're definitely developing quite a strong bond, and Thomas is getting calmer, amazingly. You know, despite how much he went off at Jonathan at the dinner party last night, and Adrian feels like he's not having to police him as much. But that was the question at the last commitment ceremony, was a sexual spark. And this is a good example of where, is it just that they're friends and that just isn't there, and that might have changed had they been sexual earlier in the relationship.
I think so. I have to start by saying I absolutely love Thomas and Adrian. They're the cutest couple. Thomas completely makes me laugh. Like, literally, Thomas is one of those like naughty school kids that you try to tell off and then you realize that they've actually said something really funny. you know, like from his face expressions to his one-liners, I feel like he needs his own show. He's like amazing, so witty, like literally amazing. But I think with Thomas and Adrian, they are like really good friends. That's clear. They've built a trust now, haven't they? And so you know, Thomas believes that Adrian wants the best for him, and Adrian is just so committed to Thomas. But I think, yeah, they are going to get to a stage where they are going to have that really difficult conversation around the sexual connection, because that is important for both of them. And we've not seen much of that. It might be, though, because there's so much drama going on around them that whether they want to or not, they're kind of getting pulled into other stories. Mm-hmm. And I think you might have heard us say at one of the dinner parties when Mal, Paul and I were watching that, yes, Thomas and Adrian's getting so caught up in the other stories, but what about them as a couple? And I'm just keen for them to kind of focus on that part as well, them as a couple.
They have got a lovely dynamic, though, haven't they? Like, mm-hmm. It's been lovely to watch it unfold. And the other couple that have had a sort of great dynamic from the beginning is Shanita and Jordan. But last night at the dinner party, when he kind of sort of dropped a bit of a bombshell that he wasn't in love yet, I don't know if they're going to come back from that. Can you come back from that? I know you can't tell us about Shanita and Jordan, but can a couple come back from one of them being so vocal that they're not in love?
I think that the expectation that a lot of us have is that the perfect couple is a couple that don't argue, that, you know, that are always laughing, that have good sex, that, you know, all the other ingredients that we know that make up a good relationship. And then people get a bit worried when there's like an argument. It's like, oh my gosh, like, can they still stay together? Can it work? And really, like, the real test of any relationship is being able to work through conflict and repair it quickly and move on. We have seen this issue kind of come up for Jordan and Shanita in terms of, I don't know if you picked up on what it was that he had said, that Jordan feels like he needs to be in love before he moves in with someone. I think for me, I would have liked Jordan to have said that maybe in private with Shanita, so that, because it just looked like Shanita was a bit shocked by that comment. She'd just come back from the homestays, they were at the dinner party. As a couple, they know that there's lots of drama around the table, but they weren't I don't think Shanita was expecting that drama to be within their relationship. But in saying that, Jordan, bless him, he was really trying. I mean, he's very fond of Shanita. I think that he absolutely loves her. So he was trying to be very sensitive with how he was saying it. But I think the more he was trying to find the words to just explain how he was feeling, yeah, the harder I think that was for Shanita to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really felt for her.
Yeah.
I felt for her, but I do think it was a good example of what you said, of them hitting an obstacle and overcoming it together. They resolved it quite quickly, I think. And I don't think he was saying it. He was clumsy with the way he said it, but I don't think there was any malice there, you know.
No, definitely not. And they do bring that to the commitment ceremony, so it is explored further. And, you know, Paul, Mel and I give our thoughts on what they can do to get past this issue.
One thing I've noticed this year, actually, is that you seem to be getting a lot more screen time in the commitment ceremony, which we're big fans of. The first week, it was almost Mel and Paul weren't there. You were all...
So, you know, as I've always said, I think you guys have said this on Instagram, like I'm an opinionated person, right? And I talk a lot, as you guys know. So, you know, in terms of, I think some people thought that last year I wasn't saying much. I'm not in control of how things are put together. And that's not me saying anything negative about the editing. It's a huge job. I wouldn't want to do it. There's lots of footage that they have to create and make a story. I don't know why they make the choices that they do in terms of like how they edit things. But what I do know is both last year and this year, I was just as vocal. My face never lies. The face expressions, you'll always see me. You'll always know what I think through my face expression anyway. But in terms of being vocal, like, that has been me throughout. But yes, you're right. You know, you're definitely seeing more of my face this time round, and me speaking more, which is good to see. And also as well, I think for me, being a sex therapist, it is amazing to have a platform to be able to share with the world facts around sex and relationships. Like, that's just a dream. So I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, I just thought, for some bizarre reason, this is the first time it's occurred to me, you're the only expert that gets their own week with the contestants, really, because that's how it's shown anyway, that the intimacy that they do, the challenges that you set them. But that was just the first time that it occurred to me. So that must feel quite nice that you get to have a bit of extra time with the contestants.
Yeah. And, you know, I think what's really lovely was the exercises that I did with Whitney and with Keisha and Kwame, those two intimacy exercises. They didn't know that I was coming. So, you know, when I knocked on the door, I mean, I love things like that. I was kind of shaking a little bit. I'm like, oh my gosh. So I knocked on the door and their face expressions when they saw me was a picture. Like, I don't know if it was captured, you know, on the show, but they were like, oh my gosh. And when they saw the suitcase, I think it was Kwame, when he saw the suitcase, he was like, oh gosh, I thought I know what you've got in there. Yeah. And then I opened this suitcase. It had like everything you can imagine, like massage oils, like little feather boas and all sorts of stuff. And like candles, there was like a heated scented candle for like sex play. But yeah, they didn't use that. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I love that. You can just imagine them thinking, oh God, the sex woman is here.
Yeah. And it was like a weekend as well. So they were really relaxed, chilling. Sun was shining, you know, they knew that they weren't going to see us for a while at the commitment ceremony. And it's like, knock, 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 Charlene by herself. Oh my gosh, what is Charlene doing here? That was really funny.
I bet Kwame just wanted to run to the park at that point.
He did. I think he was curious. Oh, to the park, did you say? Sorry, I just realised what you said there. I think so. I think Kwame was really curious about like, what's this going to be about? Okay. Like, I think he was quite keen. And like I said, Keisha and Kwame were really good sports. They really were keen to do it. So, yeah, it went better than I thought it would, in fact, with those two.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, you've told us a couple that you had to make a sharp exit. So,
yeah, it was good. The last, I don't know if they showed it on the show, but I said to Keisha, when you finish massaging him, like, go nearer to his ear and say thank you really quietly. And she did that and he flinched. And I just thought, this is great. I love it. Because he wasn't expecting to hear anything because he was so like zoned into the, you know, the power of the touch and all the sensations on his back. And obviously he was blindfolded. So, you know, if you kind of shut down one of the senses, it kind of heightens others. So he wasn't expected to hear anything in his ear. He just sort of flinched. And it was just such a funny moment. And yeah, it was at that point I realised that it was my time to go. And I headed out of there.
I love it. You're like a sex magician. Have you written a book yet, Charlene? Or is that on the cards, maybe?
Do you know what? I have so many things on my to-do list. So the next thing for next year will definitely be a podcast because there's been a lot of people asking for podcasts on all topics linked to sex and relationships. And I think it would be great to have a platform where I control the editing. Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. But in terms of a book, no plans at the moment to write a book, no.
I think you should.
Thank you. Thank you.
I've got one more question, if it's okay, but it's about you, Charlene. Okay. So I recently read on Instagram, like a proper stalker, that you like a chat-up line. And I was wondering, what's the best chat-up line you've ever had, used on you?
I just like cheat. The cheesier, the better. I think for me, it just shows, like, confidence, like, that they can come over to me. Yeah, and then particularly if they do it in front of my friends as well, like, you know, they come straight over to me, my friends are there, and then they come up with this like cheesy chat up line, particularly where for a moment I think that they've been serious, so I'm just like listening, like excuse me, and I'm like, yeah, and then they say something like cheesy. I think for me that does it for me, but I like humor, so you know, that's something that's very attractive to me, humor and confidence. So actually, now I've said that, I'm going to get DMs of random blokes.
Jokes. So many.
Yeah, my DMs are full of interesting people, I have to say.
Including us.
No, you guys are lovely. I love hearing from you guys. I have to say, like, Mass Hysteria is, like, the number one podcast go-to. I listen to it in my car, laughing and giggling away as you guys are, like, commenting and saying things that I think that I'm not allowed to say out aloud. So, yeah, I absolutely love listening to your podcast. Really, really amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Really appreciate that. And thank you for your time. It's, you know, it's always great to have you on. And I know Kelly loves talking about sex.
I do. Well, because as we've seen on this series, we're not normally allowed as women, are we? So it's nice to meet another woman who gets it and wants to talk about it. So
yeah, most definitely. Yeah, we need to talk more about it. I think, yeah, I feel like, you know, we're still in a world where it's okay for men to talk about sex, but it's not really okay for women to talk about it. And yeah, I'm going to change the world.
Yes, get that on the back of the t-shirt.
On the back. I'll do that.
Oh, thank you so much, Charlene. We really appreciate it.
Oh, likewise. I love you speaking to you guys. Thank you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.